Chapter 7. Judges and Religion. Fair warning, this chapter is all over the place because religion is all over the place. Is it just me, or does it seem that many people who surround themselves with religious shit are some of the most contemptible people in the world? It almost appears as if they require a visual reminder sitting in front of their face to confirm they are religious and therefore righteous, therefore good, therefore better than you. I didn't have any religious artifacts in my office because I'm your basic good person. Not great, but not bad either. You would probably let me babysit your kids, but you wouldn't feel comfortable with it. This is an example of a religious person. If I were to pour my hot coffee on a sleeping homeless person, then I might need a cross hanging around my neck to remind me I'm a great person. Maybe the cross could help to justify that this smelly homeless person deserved it. It was God's will and all the crap. Based on this reprehensible action, the coffee thing, my conscious self pretty much knows the exact degree of what total dick I am. Else why would I do such a thing? Chances are I'm a habitual coffee-pouring SOB, and this wasn't my first time. I'm so glad I have that plastic Jesus riding on the dashboard of my car. It's a song, check it out.
As long as I got the plastic Jesus sitting on the dashboard of my car. Going 90, it ain't scary, 'cause I got the Virgin Mary sitting on the dashboard of my car. I'm in the backseat sinning, Jesus up there grinning, sitting on the dashboard of my car. Green, white, pink or yellow, I don't care, 'cause he's my fella sitting on the dashboard of my car. As long as I got my plastic Jesus sitting on the dashboard of my car. Going 90, it ain't scary, 'cause I got the Virgin Mary sitting on the dashboard of my car. I'm in the backseat sinning, Jesus up there grinning, sitting on the dashboard of my car. Green, white, pink or yellow, I don't care, 'cause he's my fella sitting on the dashboard of my car. Sitting on the dashboard of my car.
When it comes to judges, most but not all of the Ninth Circuit judges whose office looked like you have entered a Catholic church were basically horrible people at their core. I'm not saying they killed people due to their religious beliefs, because that's the job of the prison executioner. The judge merely decreed their death sentence. Judges' religious beliefs make them believe they are supercilious. These religious judges feel they exist on a higher plane, a precocity, an elevated state of consciousness far exceeding the reach of the rest of us common infidels. And people who believe they are above others, those bitches tend to abuse any power given to them. I refer to these judges as cafeteria religious because they select which doctrines of their religion they will follow and which they will not. It's not a mental stretch to understand why this happens when these religious judges are literally put in charge of judging people. Some might argue they have been anointed by the Holy Spirit via the Florida voters and are now in charge of who lives and who dies. If that ain't a God complex, then 1,700 priests never assaulted choir boys. The real question that needs to be asked is how a judge's religious beliefs, fully on display in their chambers, affects their life and death decisions. Unrelated to religion, but goes to the character of a judge, during my 30 years of working at the court, there is some type of time factor that comes into play the longer a judge remains on the bench. I refer to this mutation of character as the judicial phases of assholinitis. If you don't know much about psychology, don't worry, because I made that word up. Assholinitis can be defined in the Brett Arquette Dictionary as the duration of a judge's time on the bench in relation to their perceived increase of their self-importance, which is then multiplied by the number of horrible criminals who have passed through their court. To be fair, I have known judges who defied this dreadful mental disorder and had remained the same nice people they were during their entire time in office. But most turn. Phase 1 of Assholinitis. When judges are initially elected into office, most of them are wide-eyed and bushy-tailed. They are merely happy to have beaten out other zero attorneys in the election, or they had been appointed by the jaded finger of the governor. They tend to be both curious and conscientious. They arrive as pristine legal souls. Most are gracious and sincere. However, since most of the new judges were previously loser attorneys, they don't have a fucking clue what they're doing. God help anyone that appears before them during this phase. Confidence-wise, they've been knocked down a notch in self-impotence, but this doesn't last long. Once they feel their judicial ass cheeks have made deep and lasting dents in their big chair, long enough to sense they know what the fuck they're doing, then a type of insolence begins to tunnel into the endocardium of their psyche. Phase 2 of Assholinitis. This is a really important phase because the new judge has matured from the perception of incompetence to unqualified competence. This conviction gives their ego a big boost and their self-importance jumps up a full 10%. Phase 2 might take on the characteristics of trying to buddy up with more experienced judges, those who have been on the bench longer. They will also develop a degree of entitlement. My computer support department was the first to recognize Phase 2 because the support calls they began receiving from this phase of judges took on a more confrontational tone. If a judge calls and my support team is helping other judges, this judge in Phase 2 might be pissed because support didn't get back to them fast enough. Basically, the head of the dragon has begun to peek out from the cave, or the turd is prairie dogging out their asshole. However you want to look at it. Phase 3 of Assholinitis. Now the judge is no longer a new judge. He or she is now an experienced judge and feels that they deserve more respect. They have sat through hundreds of trials and come face to face with some of the most repugnant humans on our planet. Each time they sit through a trial and witness the grisly evidence of a monstrous killing, a brutal rape, or any other combination of horrendous crimes man can exert on man, it adds another blot of hatred in their hearts for their fellow man. It reminds me of football players who have taken too many headshots and have developed chronic traumatic encephalopathy. This phase might take the form of bullying attorneys in their courtroom. Maybe an outburst here and there. Phase 3 finds judges getting pissed off and sentencing people in their court for contempt more often than judges in the preceding phases. Their concept of respect turns from those who admire them to those who fear them. They've begun to align themselves with caustic judges who understand their frustrations. I'm sure their home life is suffering as well, which further fuels their contempt. Phase 4 of Assholinitis. This is the final and definitive phase of a judge becoming a total asshole. They begin to treat everyone, even other judges, with choler. They will only hang out with judges who have developed power. If they forget their password, they are deeply offended. They are forced to change their password every 3 months. They become the phone call on the support line that no one wants to pick up because they are so freaking mean to court admin staff. In this phase, just about anything will piss them off, and they aren't afraid to let you know about it. So many horrible people have passed through their court that they begin to correlate humans, in general, as ugly, inhuman, dirty lowlifes. I can kind of see that taking a toll on a judge. How many murder trials can you sit through before you begin to look at our dot in space as a savage planet? If this exposure to the underbelly of the worst humans in our world doesn't bum you out, then you might be an alien life form from the planet Zoron 5. How many photos of shot, stabbed, maimed, beheaded, and abused children can you see before you start to lose your shit? That's why it's important to always vote out the incumbent judge and get fresh, unadulterated eyes on the law. I did a quick look over the 100 or so judges who got in hot water with the Florida JQC. Some were removed from the bench, some were sanctioned. The interesting thing they all had in common is almost all of these judges had reached Phase 4. When I was the CTO, there was so much backlash from Phase 4 judges that we didn't make them change their password for 10 years. In Phase 4, the judge believes that their shit don't stink. And for the rest of us, That's a good thing because they take shits all over the place. They shit on attorneys. They shit on the computer staff. They shit on court administration. And in phase four, they have solidified their alliances with other judges to the point where they shit on all the other judges. A phase four asolinitis judge is so puffed up on their own ego and so PTSD'd from all the scum that has oozed through their court, they believe they could even run for chief judge. This last step would be the pinnacle of their existence because their real life is so goddamn boring and horrible. Vote out incumbent judges, if for no other reason than to allow court administration employees to somewhat enjoy their lives. Sorry, I seem to get off a little tangent there. This chapter was meant to be centered on judges and religion. Well, let's get back into that. Chief Judge Belvin Perry's chambers had more religious shit than Jesus had, and Jesus invented that stuff. In Matthew 28.9723842938.74, the Bible clearly states that Jesus had several bumping kiosks in Jerusalem and sold all the best Jesus religious trinkets. They probably didn't have a plastic Jesus since plastic hadn't been invented. But you could be damn sure that a wooden Jesus hung around the neck of most camels in the region. Yeah, they probably had wax Jesus figurines, but they would quickly melt in the intense desert heat. But that was simply an opportunity to sell another one. Jesus's shop might have sold Jesus candles, but I doubt it. Lighting the top of Jesus's head on fire probably wasn't cool with the big guy. Bad investment of inventory. Anyway, Perry's office was the epitome of someone who was trying to convince others, as well as themselves, that they had not succumbed to phase four asolinitis. Instead, Perry might have felt he was a chief judge who was sin-free and untouchable. You see that all over the religious spectrum from priests to summer camp counselors. Most in court administration pondered if Perry looked at all his religious shit when he was fucking a court administration employee on his desk or simply closed his eyes. Only Belvin Perry knows for sure. For some bizarre reason, I can see Perry with one of his girlfriends bent over his desk, dress up, and panties down. Then, why Perry was fucking them from behind, he might look up at an image of Jesus and say, "Thank you, Lord, for providing me a woman who will take it up the ass." He would then miss a stroke in order to make a cross gesture over his heart and then get back to judicial business. I'm not really sure why some judges decorate their chambers with gobs of religious shit when the First Amendment delineates a clear separation of church and state. My theory is when a bad attorney becomes a judge, they simply think they're untouchable. It wouldn't surprise me in the least if a judge hung Hustler centerfolds on his walls and everyone who entered his chamber would simply ignore them. Yeah, I admit, that's extreme. But after working for some of the biggest Phase 4 asolinitis judges in the Ninth Circuit Court, it's probably just another problem court administration has to look forward to in the future. And it's not like you can really comment on the judges' chambers covered in religious decorations. I mean, what do you say? Hey, that's a nice picture you got there of Jesus hanging on the cross. The blood looks so damn real. I've got the one where he's pounding down wine at the dinner table with 12 of his buddies. Am I the only person on the planet that thinks that weird? Could I get away with a life-size mannequin of Perry being crucified and hanging on my office wall? Probably not realistic. I don't think the nails going through his hands could support his weight. Just for fun, let's run down the list of commandments and see how many Perry broke. 1. You shall have no other gods before me. Perry thought of himself as a god. 2. You shall make no idols. Perry's office was also covered in photos of him shaking dignitaries' hands that he idolized. 3. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. God damn it, I don't recall he ever did. 4. Keep the Sabbath day holy. On many Sabbaths when I had to go to work, I saw Perry's van parked behind the cheap hotel across from the courthouse. Maybe he was just taking a nap. Perry was certainly doing something at the hotel that had to do with holes, but I don't think that's what the commandment refers to. 5. Honor your father and your mother. I have to admit, I never heard Perry say a bad word about his parents. If they're still alive and read this book, I wonder how they will feel about him now. 6. Thou shalt not kill. Perry both prosecuted and sentenced people to death and then attended their execution. 7. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Nope. Perry never did, except every day he was a judge, and probably when he worked for the state attorney's office, and probably the day after his wedding. 8. Thou shalt not steal. Perry and Munyon defrauded Orange County out of millions of dollars. 9. Thou shalt not bear false witness against your neighbor. He sure lied his ass off during the Janice Williamson hearings, inferring she was lying about everything. Then the condom thing. 10. Thou shalt not covet. This is interesting because coveting means wanting what someone else has. Perry wanted everything everyone else had. Women, power, money, well, that's about it. This problem of judges and religion might go away on its own. It's hard these days to find a millennium that believes in any religion. Due to the internet, they have developed a healthy distrust of social media trollers, poachers, enviers, passive aggressors, intellectual brawlers, social justice warriors, contrarians, attention whores, and nihilistic trolls. Any religion that dates back hundreds of years, they refer to it as ancient folktales. New religions, they refer to as cults. After all, they live in a new world where just about everything they read on the internet is suspect. They're not nearly as gullible as previous generations. To convince them that Jesus rose from the grave, Jesus would have to make a guest appearance on earth, perform a few miracles, and even then millennials would say he was a deep fake. Trying to convince them that God lives in the clouds and grants wishes is not accepted any more than a god named Xenu, who knew that the galaxy was faced with overpopulation, so he did the one thing that made sense. He got together all of the available space psychiatrists and had them inject some of the universe's inhabitants with a substance that immobilized them. After that, he had their bodies loaded into space planes that looked exactly like DC-8s and flew them to Earth. He then proceeded to drop the paralyzed bodies of his constituents around a series of active volcanoes, which he then blew up with a hydrogen bomb. That is the premise of Scientology, if you didn't catch that. I find their skepticism refreshing. They are free from the ridiculous guilt of hell, and therefore don't feel they have to give half their salary to the church to be a good person. If hell was real, don't you think that Perry would be afraid of it? Most of these young and cynical people are happy to be on Earth and don't really give a shit where they go after it's over, because they're confident in their non-beliefs. They accept that everything has a beginning and an end. Religion is trying to prolong, or even eliminate, the end. Most young people feel that organized religion causes more harm than good. Lastly, they believe when you die, it's over. Your spirit doesn't go anywhere any more than your dog's or goldfish's spirit. Basically, you turn back into the carbon from which you came, and they're good with it. What's worse in the scattered human mind? Believing that every fucking thing you do on Earth is going to affect your afterlife? Or just living life every day like it's your last day of existence in any form or ethos? If this enlivening trend continues, then millions of churches out there will all be long gone in a single generation. And at that time, judges and religion will no longer be a problem.